Welcome back to the Thermodat podcast. I'm your host, Jayden Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Tyler Woodward.
How you doing, Jayden?
I'm doing well.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Zoo Relief, our anti-inflammatory supplement.
And also, we have another big announcement. The Thermodiet book hardcovers are in the office now, so be looking for these whenever they come out. I'm super excited. These look super slick. The inside of the book is awesome. I can't wait to flip through this and talk to Chris about a lot of the topics that he wrote about inside of there.
It's I'm very awesome. Excited to read the whole thing, especially in paper.
Yeah. And also, good conversation starter, a potato on the cover of the book. Like, that's great.
Yeah. It's about all you need.
Yeah. And it's also going to give you probably all of the tips that you need for the topic that we're going to be talking about today, which is how to mitigate weight gain on whenever you are switching to a pro-metabolic way of eating. So do you want to kick us off?
Yeah. So anytime you're switching your diet, it's going to have some consequences on your body, whether good or bad. And obviously when we're switching to pro-metabolic, the goal is to have beneficial consequences, as in boosting your metabolic rate, healing whatever needs to be healed, your skin, hair, health, aging, your joints feeling better. But it's got to be a gradual process, especially depending where you are in your diet and how big of a change this is. So when you're switching from a low-carb diet, we'll say like opposite-end diet, so low-carb keto diet, it's going to be very contrasting to the thermo diet, or pro-metabolic diet, which is a relatively high-carb diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one area where people tend to go wrong is they think that they need to just jump in head first and, you know, add in a whole bunch of carbs at once and stuff like that. But they don't realize that they're most likely insulin resistant whenever they're coming from a low carb diet. So they kind of have to teach their body how to be receptive to carbs again. And that's a slow and very incremental process that you should kind of do over time. What are some of the first steps that someone should take coming from like a low carb approach?
Yes, definitely slow and steady wins the race. Fruits, and sugar, so good sugars, let's talk about maple syrup, honey, and ripe fruits are probably going to be the best, and juices, I would say. But the key is probably going to be small incremental doses throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So you're going to do maybe some breakfast, some lunch, and some with dinner. And that also brings another good point, doing carbs with a meal. Mm-hmm. So when you're going on a low-carb keto diet or low-carb diet, you're basically training your body to be insulin resistant. Training your body to process fats really well, not process carbs. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to start being able to process carbs again, you need to make sure you're doing it slow and steady, or else your body's just going to be overwhelmed because it's not ready to process that. It's been trained pretty much. It's like trying to take a marathon runner to run sprints. Mm-hmm. Marathon runners are going to be really good at running marathons, really bad at running sprints. Can't be good at both.
Right. Yeah. And like basically what one of the things that insulin resistance is it there are a high amount of like free fatty acids floating around in the blood. And then whenever you eat carbohydrates, they will turn into monosaccharides again to the bloodstream, or a form of sugar or glucose. And then those two molecules will compete with each other to get into the cell and then to be burned in the mitochondria to be become ATP, CO2, and water. So you need to make sure that you are going to be receptive to that glucose. So you need to lower the amount of free fatty acids that are in the blood in order to allow the glucose to be taken into the cell without competition. So making sure that you have a balanced meal is going to help with that. Also, eating frequently throughout the day is going to be beneficial for that. Lowering cortisol and adrenaline is also going to be one of the goals that you're shooting for, because both of those are going to free up free fatty acids as well.
Which the carbs will help with directly.
Yeah, exactly. Sugar has a antagonist relationship with cortisol and adrenaline. Like, it's almost completely inverse whenever you look at it.
And that's because cortisol and adrenaline are basically your fuel mobilizing hormones. Cortisol breaks down amino acids, adrenaline breaks down fatty acids. So it's your catabolic hormones more or less versus sugar and insulin or anabolic hormones that basically have an antagonistic relationship. So by consuming sugar, you're going to help prevent the breakdown of adrenaline and cortisol, or help prevent the release, which helps prevent the breakdown of amino acids and fat.
Right. Yeah. And then also like having a balanced meal with protein, carbs, and fat. Typically like the recommendation from protein to carbohydrates is going to be like a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 carb to protein ratio. Mm-hmm. The reason that you want to do that is because you're not going to have as much of an insulinogenic response from the protein. And whenever you do, that glucose is going to be there to back that up. So you're not going to like have a blood sugar that's going to bottom out, because if you eat just protein, there's amino acids that will signal insulin to be released, and then there's no sugar to get into the cells. So the sugar that is in the blood is going to go extremely low. And that's called hypoglycemia. So like whenever you're, if you have low blood sugar, you get hangry, you kind of get
brain fog,
lightheaded, maybe a little dizzy, super weak, maybe a little shaky. So you definitely want to avoid that. That's why protein and a carb are so important to have together. And then the fat is going to kind of slow down the release of those carbohydrates into the bloodstream. And then that allows for like a sustained blood sugar over a longer period of time. So you don't have to eat as frequently. However, we still do recommend eating, maybe every 2 to 4 hours, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And that is the other side of fiber as well, I think. I know you're just not as huge of a fan of fiber, but fiber helps to slow the release of insulin as well. So it kind of acts like fat in that way. So I don't think you need to have a lot of fiber and a lot of fat, but I mean, most real foods come with either some kind of fat or some with sugar like milk, or some kind of fiber like fruit, which has like the encasing, which is pretty much all fiber, mm-hmm. like berries, apples. So anything that has fiber is going to be less insulinogenic. Like berries have a very low GI index because they're a lot of fiber, not that mm-hmm. much sugar.
And fructose. So yeah. Like the fiber and fructose combination probably really helps with that.
100%. So yeah, fructose is also, so glucose is what gets into your bloodstream and causes the release of insulin. So basically, your cells can, insulin resistance is basically a characterization of insulin trying to get glucose into the cell, but the glucose is competing with those fats, so the insulin doesn't work. So what your body does is it releases more insulin to get that glucose in the cell. At first this works, then it keeps releasing more and more insulin, and it basically stops working. Glucose can't get into the cell as well because there's just a buildup of too much fat. Basically, it's a metabolic traffic jam is how I like to refer to it.
Also, you kind of like burn out the cells that produce insulin over time too. It's the pancreatic cells, the beta cells in the pancreas do that, right?
The beta islet cells, islet cells.
Yeah.
So the islet cells are the pancreas, and then it's a beta something. I forget the exact name.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact name. Beta something. But yeah. So overall, I would probably start off, depending on how low carb you are. If you're zero carb right now, you probably want to start a little mm-hmm. bit lower. I'd probably start with right around 100 grams of carbs if you're, really, really low right now. Probably start around 100 grams and go up anywhere from 20 to 50 grams, anywhere from every 5 to 7 days, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then work up to about, I usually recommend anywhere from 50 to 55% of your total caloric intake being from carbohydrates. A lot of people will find benefit from 35% or 40%. Usually a 35 to 55% range is going to work well for most people. If you like getting your calories from other sources, like if you really enjoy a higher fat diet and you want to pull some of those calories away from those carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Whether it's ice cream or you want some bacon in the morning or, some extra eggs or something like that, like you can pull those calories over into your fat intake. I wouldn't go any lower than 35% just because like our bodies utilize so many carbohydrates on a daily basis, especially if you're a relatively active individual. It's going to be very important to have enough of those to fuel your body correctly.
For sure. And I also think it's very important to mention that gaining some weight is going to be natural. And now it's not necessarily going to be fat. So on a low-carb keto diet, it's virtually impossible to fill your cells' glycogen stores, your body's glycogen stores. So your liver can store basically 100 grams on average of stored glucose. And for bigger dudes or bigger women, it's going to be higher, and especially if you have a lot of muscle, you can store glycogen in your muscles as well. So you can probably store, some people, up to 200 grams of glycogen, would you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we usually use around 150 grams of sugar on a daily basis too.
And the brain is the biggest user of sugar, mm-hmm. followed by the liver, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Thyroid as well.
Yeah, exactly. They all pretty much rely on sugar and get shut down. I mean, the liver will keep running, but brain and thyroid pretty much need sugar. Mm-hmm. But so regardless, when you have very low glycogen stores, one every gram of glycogen, you store three times as much water. So when you are – the reason keto people lose weight so fast is because not only are they probably losing some fat, but they're depleting – they're losing a lot of water weight really quickly because they're not restoring their carbohydrate stores, their glycogen stores. So not that they're sweating out, but they just don't – the water isn't retained as well. It's not saying you're necessarily going to get bloated, but you're probably going to look a little bit more hydrated, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not probably going to have like a dry look, so to speak, whenever you first kind of start implementing the carbohydrates. I would also say, though, one of the benefits of that is that the pumps that you get in the gym, if you're resistance training, are going to be out of this world whenever you go from a low carb to moderate to high carb diet.
Which brings up a great point. So the most insulin sensitive time of the day, probably besides after, or sorry, breakfast is probably two, but after a workout is probably the best time to eat carbs because you just burnt whatever carbs you have. So you are very – the insulin is going to work very well basically. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the easiest time to eat the most carbs, especially people that are insulin resistant. Great time for anyone to eat carbs. But if people that are struggling with insulin resistance or need to be able to process carbs better, this is going to be the time to do it.
Yeah, especially if they're like have a higher like GI index too. Mm-hmm. Having those post-workout is going to allow that to be much more effective.
And so the glycemic index is basically how much insulin is released by food. It's not the most accurate test. It's not really a great measure of things, honestly. But basically, when you're phasing things back in, you want to stick to sugars. And preferably, I wouldn't say table sugar, although you can use it, but you need to make sure you're getting enough vitamins and minerals, which we should talk about in general. Sugar, table sugar is just sugar, no vitamins, minerals. But so we wouldn't recommend starches like potatoes and sourdough, even though those can be great.
White rice as well,
mm-hmm. because they're all glucose. So basically what happens is when you consume a high GI food like that or foods that are completely glucose, it all goes into your bloodstream versus fructose has to be processed by the liver and it's preferentially stored as glycogen. It's not. There might be some de novo lipogenesis, which is the conversion of glucose or fructose into fat in the liver, but it's very low. Your liver burns a lot of glycogen and mm-hmm. so does your brain.
That's also not necessarily a bad thing either.
Not necessarily a bad thing either. In excess, obviously, it's a bad thing, right. But so is everything in excess. So basically fruit, sugar, like natural sugars like honey, fruit, maple syrup are going to be have a much smaller release of insulin, which is great in general mm-hmm. all the time. But when you're first phasing back carbs back in, it's really important.
Yeah. And, you know, if you haven't had these foods for quite a long time, you know, you want to make sure that your fruit is very, very ripe. And in a lot of cases, you might even want to peel the skin off of your fruit and cook it on top of that, because your body might be extremely sensitive to a lot of like the cellulose and stuff like that. That's could be hard on the digestive system. So almost like pre-digesting it by peeling the skin off and cooking it is going to allow you to assimilate those nutrients a lot easier. And whenever you are cooking them, you want to cook them at a relatively low temperature so you don't denature a lot of the vitamins and minerals and stuff that you're getting in that food. So that's also something to think about as well.
And some of the fibers, I was read an article on Bilberry yesterday, they do have some antimicrobial effects. So some of the fibers, like maybe in berries, could help you to digest them better. It's kind of going to be, you know, get to see what works for you. But things like honey, so honey is probably going to be the easiest sugar to phase back in because it's very antimicrobial. It's basically like if you ever start bleeding, don't have a Band-Aid, just put some honey on it. It helps keep the wound, helps to seal it, and it will help to increase CO2 production in there just from sealing the wound from oxygen. So honey is probably the easiest and most digestible sugar, and it's a little bit higher fructose to glucose, I believe, but not much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say that, and then also like if you need something quick and easy, you know, toss a little bit of collagen and some orange mm-hmm. juice is a great way to do that as well.
Yeah. And that brings up another great point. So you can only phase as much sugar back in or carbs back in as you have pretty much the B vitamins. And I would also argue copper as well, probably, mm-hmm. and some other things to process them.
So, yeah, can you actually go in why those are a limiting factor for your ability to use carbohydrates?
Yeah, so basically most of the B vitamins are used in cellular respiration. So a big argument is that sugar depletes your body of minerals and vitamins and minerals. Not true. It uses them. You know, like you go to the – it's a very perceptive thing. Like everyone says go to the gym, like you burn calories. Well, sugar increases your metabolic rate, so it increases your nutrient demand as well. So the B vitamins, especially B1, 2, 3 – maybe 5 and 6 as well, are all rate limiting steps in the process of using carbs for fuel. So basically, if you're deficient in those vitamins, you will not be able to utilize glucose through cellular respiration, which can either leading it to build up outside the cell, causing what's known as insulin resistance pretty much, or it can be converted to fat because it's not just going to sit there. Or it can be converted into lactic acid, which is probably the least likely to happen in that situation, mm-hmm. but it can. But so if you are consuming a lot of carbs without, let's say, B1, B2, B3, then you are more likely to store them as fat versus burn them as energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
And so that's why you should really pair. So fruits have some of the B vitamins. Honey doesn't have a lot of the B vitamins, but has copper. Copper is also going to be important in bringing oxygen into the cell and copper outside of the cell, or CO2 outside of the cell. But consuming beef liver at least once a week, I've been messing around with the daily beef liver shot. I've been enjoying that. Coffee has some of the B vitamins, but it's also going to be a metabolic stimulant, so it's something you got to be careful with. What else is a lot of the B vitamins? Pork has some.
Mm-hmm. Potatoes, I think, do have a decent amount, but you know, if you're taking steps slowly from a low-carb approach, then you probably want to hold those off till only post-workout and probably peel them too, because the skin tends mm-hmm. to give some people who aren't used to them some trouble.
Yeah, and make sure you're consuming those with calcium, because the oxalates in potatoes, not that it's a huge deal, but that can help too, help with the digestion, especially if you're not peeling the skin. But so yeah, organ meats, I mean, muscle meats also has some, chicken has some, pretty much. B vitamins are pretty much in every living organism because every living organism uses sugar as energy.
Right. Eggs.
Yeah. Eggs are a great source. Oysters have some B12, I believe. Fish is a great source, especially cold water fish warm water fish that has low PUFAs. And then, I mean, if you are worried, and so especially if you are someone that has drank alcohol heavily, like myself, it might be worthwhile to supplement with some extra B vitamins. Our Daily B is a great source of those B vitamins in case you want to just ensure. There's really no downsides to getting too much of the B vitamins. You can get too much of the B9 and B12 because those are the only two that can be stored. But generally, I don't think there's a huge worry. Mm-hmm. It's obviously going to be contextually dependent. So if you want to get a nutrient test or consult with a doctor, it's always a great idea. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think the nutrient test is definitely the way to go if you're trying to figure out what specifically that you need. Mm-hmm. I remember, what was it, last week you were mentioning that it might be a good idea to supplement with all of the B vitamins versus just one of them specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, let's say if you're deficient in B1, you supplement with B1, but then you're not getting enough B2. So it's just like if you imagine it like a level in Pac-Man, pretty much, like you need one to get the two to get to the three. There's mm-hmm. like 20, I heard Kate Deering say this morning, it's 20 minerals and vitamins used in the process of converting glucose into ATP. So any one of those that you're deficient in could have an impact on not being able to utilize it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. In that case, I'd probably suggest go ahead and continue getting either a B complex in or your foods that are high in B vitamins. And then if you're pretty deficient in one of them, maybe supplement with a little bit extra mm-hmm. of that single one.
Yeah. I think it is hard to tell. I'm not sure how accurate the tests are for the B vitamins, especially the water soluble one, but it's good to have in general. And then lastly, getting some electrolytes in is going to be very important. So a lot of fruits and again are going to have electrolytes because they need them to live. But potassium is almost like insulin and acts very similar to insulin and helps to shuttle glucose into the cell. Sodium helps to keep potassium in the cell. Magnesium is bound to ATP, so it's magnesium ATP. So if you want to create ATP, you need magnesium. So get some chocolate ice cream in you mm-hmm. or some cacao or coffee has some as well. And calcium helps to keep magnesium in the cell, and they pretty much all function in relationship with that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, shameless plug, the next episode is going to be on minerals, so make sure to tune in for that one.
Yes, sir.
But can you be a little bit more specific with that question?
Oh, so how important do you think it, or do you think there's any minerals that you really need to focus on to help increase your ability to process glucose?
I think they're all important. I think that for me personally, I've noticed a definite benefit in increasing my sodium intake through salt, especially like sweating so much with like jujitsu and working out and stuff like that, or even skiing, like getting in, an extra gram of salt mm-hmm. a day through a salt tablet or something really helps my performance. Epsom salt baths mm-hmm. tend to help my recovery. Magnesium bicarbonate. I do like the magnesium bicarbonate that you've been hooking me up with. So that's been nice.
Yeah. It's also really interesting. Like, I don't know too much about salt. It's obviously very essential in mineral metabolism, but to me right now, salt is like the mineral preserver because mm-hmm. if you don't have enough salt, you're just going to lose everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's very important. Salt's the primary mineral you lose if you have enough salt. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have enough salt, you start losing potassium, start losing magnesium, start losing calcium. And that's when I think you run into a lot of problems.
Right. And that's mostly because of aldosterone. Mm-hmm. So like if you don't have enough sodium in the system, aldosterone's going to spike to hold on to the sodium that you do have in the system. So you don't experience, I believe it's called like hyponatremia, mm-hmm. which is like not enough salt in the system. And so like whenever aldosterone goes up, it tends to kind of leach a lot of the other minerals out.
Which is good because it needs to preserve the salt, mm-hmm. but it's not optimal. It's a survival mechanism.
Right. Sodium is also one of the main electrolytes that is responsible for blood volume. So that's one of the reasons that aldosterone spikes is to maintain blood volume so you can continue circulation and stuff like that.
Yeah. But we'll save this for the next podcast.
Right. Yes. So that's kind of the low carb approach. Take it slow. Mm-hmm. Be very incremental. Possibly cook certain fruits, make sure they're super ripe. What about on the other end of the spectrum? Say somebody's on a vegan diet. How would they kind of approach this?
So it's probably going to be a very opposite approach. Mm-hmm. So, and honestly, they would probably have an easier time doing it. The only thing they might have a hard time doing, I would imagine, is phasing meat back in. Mm-hmm. So would you think you want to cook? I still think generally you'll probably want to cook everything medium rare mm-hmm. or give or take. If you like a medium, that's fine. If you like a little more rare, it's fine. If you like a medium well, I don't understand it, but.
Yeah. I think it depends on the meat, one.
Okay.
I think number two, they need to focus on increasing stomach acid because yes. they haven't had a reason to really produce stomach acid because all the plants have really just bogged down their stomach mm-hmm. acid production at this point. Also, I would probably take steps to clean out your gut too, because you'll probably have a lot of stuff in there that's kind of backed up and kind of clogging up the system. Mm-hmm. A lot of vegan people that I've talked to tend to have like the little pooch belly, you know. So kind of cleaning out the intestine with some activated charcoal, some Cascara Sagrada, or something like Zupu that has a mm-hmm. chelator like bentonite clay and then Cascara in it. Something like that would be beneficial to just maybe do for a few days just to kind of clean everything out. And then supplementing with something possibly like betaine, maybe some enzymes. Those things are going to help you kind of break down the meat whenever you do start implementing it.
Yeah, betaine and enzymes will be great, especially when I would consume it with a meal probably. And then I would try to avoid drinking a lot of liquids around a meal because mm-hmm. you're going to dilute your stomach acid. And then when you're vegan and you don't have a low stomach acid, you really need it. So just trying to just consume, I guess, like maybe consume your milk before or after the meal, or after the meal would probably be ideal. And then you could look into supplementing something like Tudka, which is like a special form of taurine, or just supplementing taurine, which is going to help increase bile and bile acid production, which mm-hmm. will help to improve digestion, get things moving along. The raw daily carrot a day, I think is great just to, help things to stimulate peristalsis. And then getting a walk in after your meal will probably be huge, people that are vegan.
Absolutely. I feel like that's beneficial for everybody in general. One thing that I forgot to mention for the low carbers who are implementing this and want to watch out for fatty liver is implementing choline into your supplement routine as well. That's going to help export fat from the liver so you don't get any kind of fatty liver buildup over time. I think like 90% of people in the US typically are deficient in choline, so getting a little bit extra, it helps with that, but then it also helps with bile acid production too.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons that it helps get estrogen out of the system, is because it's kind of helping to like push it out of the bile duct.
Okay. And also for the people, the low carbers, getting a walk in after, just not sitting and just staring at your screen after you eat, or just doing something relaxing, even if it's just playing a game, not just like going and doing something monotonous like watching TV, will probably really help you not crash from the carbs.
Yeah. And then as far as going back to the plant-based people who are kind of implementing some of this, I would start with more of the gelatinous proteins coming in. This is going to help with healing your digestive system. They're also going to be the most easily digestible types of proteins too. So collagen, bone broth, maybe making some like jello gummies, something like that would be really beneficial.
And like the oxtail stuff where it's like the slow cook stuff, right? That's going to be very beneficial.
Yeah, oxtail is great. The organ meats are also going to be great to implement. You know, it, depending on your texture preferences, it might not be your favorite, but definitely very beneficial. Yeah, those are probably the easiest proteins that I would recommend. And then
maybe milk too.
Yeah, milk is something that you definitely want to implement incrementally whenever you're adding it back in, because if you haven't had dairy for a while, your body has basically shut down the enzymatic production for lactase, which is the enzyme that's needed to break down lactose. So you can have some lactose intolerance because of that. Mm-hmm. And so having very small doses over time, and maybe starting with like a hard cheese or something like Parmesan cheese, Parmigiano Reggiano, stuff like that. Those are easier to digest. So starting with implementing small amounts of those, and then implementing small amounts of milk, and then increasing over time the amount that you intake is going to be extremely beneficial. I would also say that
taking enzyme would help too, that has lactase.
Yeah. Yeah,
or lactose-free milk is lactose-free milk. Basically, just they give the lactase enzyme in the milk, so it breaks down automatically. That can really help.
Yeah, raw milk is going to be beneficial for that. I know a lot of people who are lactose intolerant, they'll drink raw milk that hasn't been pasteurized, and it still has a lot of the enzymes in it that are necessary to break down a lot of the molecules in there.
Yeah, I've heard that it does have lactase in it, but I've yet to see this confirmed, so it's an interesting point. I would like to see some studies. If anyone has any, feel free to send them our way.
Yeah. Also like our enzyme supplement is super great. Like my girlfriend, she dairy tends to kind of mess with her a little bit. So, she takes one enzyme supplement whenever we have some dairy and like no problems whatsoever.
When I phased dairy back in, I probably could have used that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a rough 2 weeks, but definitely go slow and steady with everything. It's carbs, dairy, meat. And it will help. It, might be a little tough at first, but I mean, the slower you go, it'll be easier on you, and you just do it gradually.
Definitely. Yeah. Also like implementing goat dairy before, like cow dairy is going to be beneficial because the protein molecules in them are a lot smaller. So it's kind of easier to break down. I think the lactose type of molecule in goat milk is a little bit easier to break down as well.
Interesting. It has like A1 casein, right? Instead of A2, they say.
I'm not entirely sure.
I think that's one of the reasons they recommend like, it's like the other forms of milk, because cows is A2 casein, which is harder to break down. And some people don't have the gene for it, apparently.
I know in the A2 milk, instead of having like a histidine molecule, so I can't remember what type of protein it is, but at one of the turning points, it has, instead of a histidine amino acid, it has a proline there.
Okay.
And that kind of eliminates a lot of the possible histamine reactions that can happen in that.
Good to know.
Yeah. But yeah, I would take it very slow. The gelatinous meats are probably what you want to implement first, and then over time, probably some more muscle meats if you want to.
And honestly, ice cream is probably a great choice too.
Yeah, definitely. Especially before bed, if you're having trouble sleeping, that is always a great option. I have ice cream probably every single day before bed, and, I definitely sleep better whenever I have it.
Yeah, especially if you can make your own. Make sure to get something without high fructose corn syrup or any of the guar gums or preservatives in it. Haagen-Dazs is our personal favorite. If you can't make your own, Haagen-Dazs is pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you can make your own, adding some glycine is probably a great way to do it. It's going to help with sleep. It's going to help with insulin sensitivity as well. And it's overall, it's going to be a great way to get both some good quality fats, a lot of nutrients in milk, B vitamins as well. And great way to glycine and help sleep, energy, probably a lot of things, honestly. Yeah.
Also with the milk stuff, like the lower fat types of milk and dairy are going to be a lot harder to digest than the whole fats. So if you're having trouble digesting it and you're implementing it over time, start with the whole fat stuff and then you work your way into the lower fat stuff if you're trying to cut calories places.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't have an issue with the low fats inherently, but try and get something without the added vitamins. They usually put D2, which is very not bioavailable. We can't really use it very readily. And retinal palmitate, which I don't inherently have an issue with. But according to Ray Pete, and I don't quite understand the process yet, the emulsification process, which basically how I imagine them just rolling up the vitamins so they get into the milk and mix it in. Usually they're fat soluble vitamins. So if you're taking all the fat out, how you get it into a water soluble base or milk is pretty much water if you just take all the fat out. So it's interesting, and that can also be difficult to digest.
Mm-hmm. This is probably for a longer conversation, but also like I feel like whenever you're getting in too much vitamin A like that, especially whenever it's not in an extremely active form, so like the carotenoids, for instance, they mm-hmm. block proper thyroid function and stuff like that. I feel like they're also taking up space whenever the mitochondria is looking to uptake vitamin A, cholesterol, and thyroid hormone to form mm-hmm. pregnenolone. Like if you don't have enough retinol in there and the carotenoids and stuff are taking the place of that retinol that's supposed to be there, then you're producing less pregnenolone overall because of that.
Interesting.
So, you know, I would eliminate your vitamin A intake as much as you can outside of the animal vitamin A.
Mm-hmm. And getting vitamin A and D have an antagonistic relationship. So more vitamin A you get, more vitamin D you get, which can include sunshine. It actually breaks down vitamin A and helps to increase the steroid hormones as well, which is a great thing. But so getting more vitamin A in the summer is probably easier and more beneficial than getting in the winter where you're not getting a lot of sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's another conversation that we should probably talk about later on. Yeah. The best vitamin A sources.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Awesome. You have anything else to add?
I don't think so. You know, another good, enzyme supplement is probably the MitoLife supplement. He has some really good enzyme supplements.
Yeah.
Some bromelain. It's like a really high potency,
which
bromelain
is in our Zoo Relief as well.
Yeah. I'd highly recommend getting something like that to help with the digestion process as well. But yeah, I would say like whenever it comes down to it, balancing out your blood sugar and then fixing your digestion are going to be the two hardest things coming from both ends of the spectrum. So
for sure,
those are the things that you want to focus on. Anything outside of that is probably just fluff or is going to be secondary to those two things.
Yeah. Awesome. Sweet. So make sure to check us out on Instagram at Umzu and at Umzu Fit. Jayden and I are also on Instagram at Research Cowboy and at Ty Woodward Fit, and Facebook groups, and on umzufit.com, our all-inclusive fitness platform. And then definitely make sure to check out our founder, Christopher Walker.
Yep. Talk to y'all next time.
Have a good one.